my claim to fame, I don't think you y'all know this, wasn't football. My claim to fame coming out of high school was track and field.
Javelin.
Right. I was a world record holder for 17-year-old for the javelin. And I didn't want to throw the javelin. I wanted to play football. Resilience came for me, the definition of it, or total understanding of it, was when I wanted something so bad and someone else got it. And I got a call from the Steelers about crossing the line. I said, I'm not crossing the line. I can't be the quarterback of a team, lead a team who unanimously voted not to cross the line. I did not like my head coach at all, Chuck Noll. He was not a nice person. And he was mean to me. In all my 14 years of playing for him, he never shook my hand one time. Nice job, Terry.
Four Super Bowls together.
Not one time did he shake my hand. I learned through the hurt and the pain of someone taking something from me that I absolutely love, which was quarterbacking the Steelers. And it was hard. But, man, resilience is just pretty simple. Any business, it's just, okay, here's what I want. Here's where I want to get to. Here's my goal. If you are fantastic, and if you are a superstar, you will be treated differently than the average Joe.
Yeah.
All right? Jimmy would say, the heck with the process. Show me the result.
This is To The Point. A Rhino Experience. Voted one of the top home services marketing and operations podcasts. Cutting through the bullshit and getting to the point.
Plumbers, I like plumbers. Matter of fact, we had to bring some plumbers to the ranch today in Dallas. I'm a rancher, and all our pipes busted, and they were calling plumbers out and to fix and get the water going, and even propane lines froze. I never heard of that. So, yeah. How you folks doing? Thanks for having me here. Well, you didn't know you were having me here, did you?
It's a mystery. Yeah. But I feel like they could hear your laugh from the back of the room. Like when.
Well, I hope not. I just came in from Hawaii. And I told my wife, well, I didn't know how to dress for this event. And so I took a suit. Foxgate has all these beautiful suits for us. And so I got a suit and put it in one of those carrier things where you can roll it and then zip it up. And it's kind of, you know, small. It's nice. And I brought my cowboy boots and I had them packed in my bag. So we got home to Hawaii. And my wife goes, where's your suit? I said, well, don't you have it? So I lost the suit. And that's unfortunate. That was a beautiful suit. So I don't know where it is. And I didn't have any clothes. And these are the only pants I have. My wife told me, she said, you're going to go up there and you're going to tell these folks everything that you have on is you're apologizing for. Well, I actually am, because these socks I bought at the golf shop the other day, and these pants I've been wearing for 4 days. So, and I bought this on the way to the airport in Kona yesterday, so, and it's already wrinkled. So anyway,
I mean, at
main
least
thing I'm hearing, thank you.
You're dressed like this by accident. I dress like this by like planning. I dress.
It's a godsend, because I'm looking around and I have you beautiful women in here. The guys are pretty much dressed like like Sebastian.
Like
here.
Me.
Yeah. So thanks for having me here.
Guys, big round of applause for Terry. Thank you much for coming. He was at the Super Bowl.
Oh, is that it? Thank you. Thank you so much. Did y'all watch the Super Bowl? What do you think? Good? You happy about it? Yeah, good. You know, I was at an event in New Orleans. I know. I don't want to cut into your time. And we had probably 2,000 people. And so I asked, who in here is Eagles fans? Place erupted, like 95%. And I went, wow, that's crazy. Chiefs fans, and two people clapped. Two. So that only tells them I married a Chiefs. I married a girl from Kansas City. So obviously, when I picked the game the other day, I picked the Chiefs. I didn't want to pick the Chiefs, but I picked the Chiefs. And I've been divorced before. I don't want to lose another house. So I, anyway, it was one of those games where if both teams played their best, Philadelphia would win because their defense, every defensive front four was just amazing. So yeah, it was an okay game. Did you see the numbers that they did? The largest Super Bowl in the history, 126 million people. There's 330 million people in America. That is a ton. The Fox pregame show averaged 28 million for 5 hours. That's who in the world is going to sit around and watch that mess for 5 hours? 28 million. You know how much money they made? God, more money than plumbers, I can assure you that. 28 million. And I guarantee you, if I go in there and ask for a raise, well, we don't have it. We're running a little tight. Well, you just paid Tom Brady $37 million a year. I'll take it.
How'd you get that deal, man?
Just a bad deal. That's what it was.
So
anyway, you're doing fine so far, Sebastian.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that.
Thank you. Are we from all over the country, or are we? Man, that's cool. Well, appreciate what you do. It's been pretty cool.
So what we're going to be doing, just to give you a quick heads up, Terry, I'm going to ask you a few questions, and then we're going to open it up to the crowd because a lot of these guys and gals, they have a lot of questions about their business, and they want to learn from one of the top.
A football player?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, I can help you. I'll help you with that plumbing. Something doesn't go uphill. I know that.
Well, they want to learn from some of the top people that have ever, you know, done something at the highest level. And you're one of the best people at that.
Well,
you know,
it's
4 Super Bowls and Hall of Famer. And just like you've you're very successful at business as well. You were talking about your horse business backstage. And so. Oh, what is Siri doing? Look at these robots,
He's
man.
He's got his phone on.
The Siri's like talking to me. I'm like, Jesus, this technology, man.
Oh, that's funny.
Who wants to participate?
Hey, so I'm just sitting here looking at the drapes, and it looks like an America flag somewhat, doesn't it? Doesn't it?
A little bit.
Red one. Yeah, I thought, well, man.
Two-thirds.
Kind of cool. Yeah.
It's a circus.
Oh, a circus. Nice. Okay. Yeah. All right. Fire away.
But yeah, so Terry, one of the first questions I wanted to ask you, so everybody knows you, you know, like 4 Super Bowls, the Steelers, they know about you from your very awesome laugh that you can hear for like a mile away. But one of the things that you talk about a lot, and I've watched a lot of your interviews, is you talk about resilience. And you've had a lot of setbacks in your life when you started in the NFL, when you were playing baseball, ADHD, you beat, you know, diseases. Like you've done so many things that setbacks in life. And you talk a lot about resilience. If there was a playbook of Terry Bradshaw's life, what would the first chapter be called? Would it be called resilience?
I think when you use the word resilience, first of all, you got to have, resilience from what? I mean, if you're a little boy, you don't know what you necessarily want to grow up being, you know. As you move through young adulthood, and you finally get into an area of your life, mainly in my case, it was I was an athlete. I wanted to play professional football. I mean, that was the primary goal. My claim to fame, I don't think y'all know this, wasn't football. My claim to fame coming out of high school was track and field.
Javelin.
Right. I was a world record holder for 17-year-olds for the javelin. And I didn't want to throw the javelin. I wanted to play football, so I never threw the javelin. After I could go into colleges anywhere in the world.
There was not a lot of money in the job.
No, not a lot of money, and hard to find someone to catch it and bring it back. So it was. So anyway, I was actually recruited by Jimmy Johnson, head coach of the Cowboys, and now with Fox, he recruited me. His first coaching job was at Louisiana Tech, and if you watch our pregame show, they did an AI thing on him. It was pretty cool, and it really tore him up emotionally. But resilience came for me, the definition of it, or total understanding of it, was when I wanted something so bad and someone else got it. Now, do I say, okay, I'm not as good as that person? Well, I could say that. They beat me out. Or can I push ahead and can I be better than them? Can I throw the ball better than them? Can I run faster than them? I used to use those sayings like, I have the title and the deed to my dream. So if I give up on that, that's a lack of resilience. And so I found that you have to understand who you are. You got to understand who you are big time. I don't care if you're 16, 17, 20, 30, whatever that is. And then you have to have a direction in your life, and you're never too young to have a direction. Never. You'll find out what he wants. Well, I've got friends that have children right now. Even the other day, some friends of ours in Hawaii that are staying with us, they have a son who's 24 years old, and he starts a job, quits a job, starts a job, quits a job, starts a job, quits a job. And I said to him, I call him, I'm not going to tell you what I call him, but I call him, and I just said, he's got to get grounded. He's got to figure out what it is that gets him out of bed, all right? And then plow through it, man. Start gathering all you can. And failing is just part of life. And if you really love what you're doing, it's just a setback. That's all it is. It's just a setback. And then you dust yourself off. You try to figure out what it is. Okay, why did I lose my job to Joe Gillum in Pittsburgh? Why did Phil Robertson of Duck Dynasty beat me out in college? That is a joke. How did that happen? That was, it'll never happen. All right, and why did I transfer to Florida State and only to get there and have the athletic director tell me, you better get your butt back, Louisiana Tech. We're going to be filed on for tampering charges. You got to go back. And I had no money. And so back in the 60s, Coca-Cola bottles, empty ones, were a nickel. You guys are way too young to remember this. But you could get a nickel if you took them back. They'd give you a nickel for them. So I went in all the little roadside travel lodges, and I would go in because they had outside in the little hallways, they'd have the empty bottle stack. I'm going to tell you, I stole them. I stole Coke bottles. And I have any money.
Stole Coke like bottles, Terry Bradshaw, Rhino.
Oh, I know, Rhino. But I stole Coke bottles, and that was the only way I could get home. That's what I used for gas money to get back to Louisiana Tech. And then I had to face the players who I had already known in my mind. They did not want to accomplish what I wanted to accomplish. They did not care that we lost. And I knew it. That's why I transferred. And so I had to go back, and a whole new, another side of Terry had to come out, and it did. But, man, resilience is just pretty simple in any business. It's just, okay, here's what I want. Here's where I want to get to. Here's my goals. I'm on this journey, which is fun. Journeys are great. I'm on a journey right now. I'm 76 years old, and someone said the other day, when you're going to retire, and like in the tombstone, Doc Holliday said, what? Retire, it said, no, I'm just reaching my prime. And that's kind of the way I feel, So it's pushing forward, not giving up. And if you do give up, that's not what you're supposed to be doing anyway. Go find out what motivates you, stimulates you, gets you out of bed, excites you about life, and then, plow through it,
Can you talk about that example that you listed in 1974? You got benched.
Oh, yeah, boy, that was terrible.
Then they put you back in,
I got benched again.
So talk about that moment and what was going through.
I got benched for a quarterback, a black quarterback, Joe Gillum. He was amazing, skinny kid. He was a drug addict, And that's what got him. That's what Finney killed him. But I wouldn't cross a picket line. We were on strike. And the NFL owners knew the longer that the strike would go on, that the players eventually that were making a living had to pay mortgages and so on and so forth, get plumbing fixed, let air conditioning, whatever. They would come back. They would cross the line. And I got a call from the Steelers about crossing the line. I said, I'm not crossing the line. I can't be the quarterback of a team, lead a team who unanimously voted not to cross the line. And so I wouldn't cross the line. So they called Joe Gillum, and he crossed the line and went in and started playing, and they threw the football 30, 35 times a game, which we never did when I was quarterback, and we ran the ball. And he played so well in preseason that he was announced the starter after the strike was settled. And so I was backup. And eventually he started strong, then he started fading, then he put me back in to start. I didn't play well, and he benched me, put Hanratty in. He didn't play well. They benched him, put me back in, and I finished out the season, and we went on and won a Super Bowl. But the benching thing was the hardest thing for me to handle. Because number one, if I'm going to lose a customer, I'm not going to lose a customer because I didn't get an opportunity to bid or to share my business with them. Here, we can do this, we can do that. Oh, no, we're going to go with them because we always go, no, I can do a better job. I'm more qualified. Well, if you're not given that opportunity, then that hurts. Because now you're considered a failure. When in fact, if you really understand the situations, I'm not a failure. I took it so personal. I did not like my head coach at all, Chuck Noll. He was not a nice person. And he was mean to me. In all my 14 years of playing for him, he never shook my hand one time. Nice job, Terry.
Four Super Bowls.
Not one time did he shake my hand. I was walking out, going onto the field to play the Cleveland Browns, and he stopped me and he said, you mess up out there today, and I'll bench your ass in the first half. So that's the kind of guy I was playing for. I'm glad I played for him, Sebastian, because I couldn't stand him. And I learned through the hurt and the pain of someone taking something from me that I absolutely love, which was quarterbacking the Steelers. And it was hard because when you're 23, 24 years old, you feel sorry for yourself. I'd never come out of a little old bitty school, never did the interviews, never played on that television or anything like that. So everything was a learning for me, a learning process. And so getting benched was, man, I cannot believe in my mind, as good as I thought I was, that I could lose my job to anybody.
How did you, in this period of time, you know, you're going through all this internal struggle. You're not getting along with your coach.
Oh, no, I'll stop you there. Now, I got along with him. I made an effort to get along with him. I didn't like him.
I see.
People are surprised later after all the success we had that they said, you didn't like him? No, I didn't like him. I didn't like him at all. He wasn't nice. He was that old Vince Lombardi, he was a tough guy. You don't tell your starting quarterback you're going to, I see you down there filming this, that if your ass doesn't play well, I'm going to bench in the first half. You don't tell your starting quarterback that. We had no offensive coordinators, never had one. Never had no quarterback coach. I had a quarterback coach one year, and I had my best statistical year when Bay Pirelli was my quarterback coach. It's a tough city. Pittsburgh was a tough town. They loved defense. Franco Harris came, and we ran the football. It was just the beginning of a dynasty and the beginning of a city that had so much pride in their football team. And this coach was such a smart, very smart guy, very smart. I learned more about defense than I did about offense. I don't know near as much about offense as I know about defense because he taught me defense. And so by teaching me defense, I'm able to look at a defense and I can see what it is, or I take two steps back and identify it and read any of the coverages. And so that I thank him for. But I've often said, I'm a mama's boy. You pat me on my back, I'm going to tell you, mama, there's nothing I won't do for my mama. God bless her. She passed away last year. But I'm a mama's boy. I respond to sweet and kindness. I'll play my ass off. But if you're mean and hateful to me, man, you put me on edge, and I don't want to be on edge. And it actually took me, Sebastian, until I'm probably 28, 29, to where I had the courage to not let him. But finally, I had so much confidence in myself, he just couldn't faze me. We played Cincinnati. I drove the team 99 yards, and Mike Webster, our Hall of Fame center, saw Chuck calling timeout. We're like 4 inches to go to score. And I went, what? And I turned around and I looked, and they're calling timeouts. I timeout? What are you talking about? I'm 4 inches here, first and goal. I called my own play, so I don't need a play. Yeah. So I jog over and I say, what's up? He said, wait a minute, we got a play we want to run. I said, you got to be kidding me. Chuck, I'm on the 4-inch line. It's first and goal. I'll sneak it in 4 times. I'll get it in. Sometimes I said, now when I was on the 1-inch line on the other end, I could have used a little help then to help me get down the field. So I took his hands and I threw his hands off and I turned around and ran back out and I heard some language that said, you better go back over there, boy. Yeah. So I jogged back over and I said, what? Are you kidding me, Chuck? And so he put his hands on me. His one thing he had that he'd do occasionally with me would grab me. And when he'd grab me, it's just, I guess it's a control thing. And I didn't like it. I didn't like being controlled. And I threw his hands off. I said something to him. And that, what I said to him, was what endeared me to the players. I went back in the huddle and everybody said, "Everybody, what did Chuck, what play did Chuck have? What was the play?" I said, I told him y'all had a play y'all wanted to run, so not a problem. Y'all, what's that play? They went, we don't have a play. Are you kidding me, Brad? We don't have a play. Are you serious? You messing with us? And I started laughing. I said, yeah, man, I'm messing with you.
And so this is why I wanted to ask you about this, because this is one of the parts in the story of your story that I find so fascinating. And I think it's super relevant to everybody here in the room today, because just like you guys at the Steelers had so many different personalities, you have such a different personality than your head coach. And these owners, they have so many technicians who have different personalities, and they themselves have, you know, people in their management team with different personalities, different goals. You played with, big like legends like you
Joe Green, Franco Harris,
Mean Joe Green,
Jack Lambert,
Lance
all
Lahan,
13 Hall of Famers. Yeah.
How did you guys get a group of like big egos and people with different personalities to rote together?
Sebastian, it was a group of men, and I've said this so many times, and the common denominator was love. We loved one another, and we worked at our friendship. You know, I didn't always get along with all of them, and we worked through all of that, and we got so friggin' close. And when you have a team and you're winning together, your confidence just grows. You know, it just does. When you're in a huddle and you're calling a play and you got a center from Wisconsin, you got a guard from USC who is, you know, Jerry, and I nicknamed him Moon because he was always just kind of just looking out and staring in space. You got a right tackle that played tight end for me and caught a touchdown pass against the Vikings in Super Bowl IX, Larry Brown. He weighed 232 pounds. The following year at training camp, he weighed 297. He played tackle for the remaining 8 years of my career there. Our left tackle, John Cope, 255, weighed 255 pounds. Left tackle, 255 pounds. They got running backs weighed 255. And John Cope was the Oklahoma State Cowboy. It was Rocky Blyer got shot in Vietnam and had to have several operations and became the first pair of running backs to rush for 1,000 yards. And so then Franco, of course, from Penn State and was the Italian Stallion. And so it's Swanee from USC. And then John Stallworth, my split end, went to Alabama A&M and N, I guess. all black school, and they were all different. And I got to know them. You know, I got to Jim Smith from Michigan, my slot receiver. I'm still in touch with Stallworth and Smitty. Calvin Sweeney from USC, another wide receiver in the second round. All of these guys used to come over to my house and eat pizza on Monday night, watch Monday Night Football. You bond and you get to know one another, and apologize for mistakes you make. And the most important thing, though, is you're honest with them. Sometimes as a quarterback and calling your own plays, these guys don't call their own plays nowadays. They have placards on their wrists and they flip them and stuff like that. And they have speakers in their helmet. I mean, you go to work with a speaker in your helmet telling you what to do and not to. That's why I always say, if you're going to measure people, measure us equally. You know, don't give me a play thing and a speaker in my head and tell me, go to number 14. 14. Really? That's it? You're going to. So it was, it's a case of understanding who they are. I had a Jewish tight end, Randy Grossman. I had a big tight end from Clemson, Benny Cunningham, passed away. He was 6'5", 265. All walks of life, all around the country. And it was just a fun bunch, too. They were, you know what? We won. We played hard. We were vicious. We were extremely physical.
I mean, back then, though, the rules were completely different. People clotheslining.
Clotheslining, you bet. Yeah, just nasty, man. Just nasty. It's just the way football should be played, you know? Just, yeah. Yeah, instead of, you know, all the. I'm so proud to be a football player, but if I could take shots at these rich guys, I'd take them, you know, $50 million a year. They hadn't done diddly doo doo. And you go $50 million. They won't be here. They're not coming here to do this. $50 million. My God. They're, you know,
a lot of people don't know this about you, which is actually I'm going to ask you a very selfish question, because you actually used to be a car salesman.
I did.
When you started, too.
Well, I didn't make any money.
You were playing the NFL.
I was in the NFL. Yeah. I was the first player taken in the draft in 1970. I made $25,000 my first year in the NFL. 25 grand. All right? The kid that gets drafted this year, number one, will sign for, now, it's not like it was 8-10 years ago, but he'll sign for at least $20 to $30 million. All right, and I got $25,000. I got $100,000 signing bonus. I spread it out over 10 years, $10,000 due to me on January 2nd. And that was my contract. So I left Pittsburgh after my rookie year. I went back to college at Louisiana Tech. I had one course to graduate. I had to go back and take a three-hour course in management. I went back and took that course to graduate. I graduated. Which was really upset me, because I wanted to graduate with my class. But the president and the dean wouldn't let me. I'm not going to lie to you, folks. I've been going around the state of Louisiana, Texas, Mississippi, Arkansas, recruiting students to go to Louisiana Tech. They used me after I became the first pick in the draft. And so I thought that while I was doing all this recruiting for Louisiana Tech, they'd cut me some slack and give me a three-hour course. Go ahead. You don't have to give me an A. Give me a C. I don't care what you give me. Just let me graduate with my class. But they wouldn't. I had to go back. So I went back and graduated, but I didn't have any money. I think I came home my rookie year with $7,000. And so I didn't want to live with my parents. And I got me an apartment in Shreveport, Louisiana, and went to Bill Hanna Ford and asked for a job. And I stole used cars. I sold used cars.
How long did you do that for?
3 years. I'd used cars. Then I moved to used trucks. In my third year, I was fleet. I was fleet selling. If you're a plumbing company or whatever and you got 20 trucks, I'd sell you 20 trucks. Then I became a fishing guide at Toledo Bend. I didn't know where the fish were. Your guess is as good as mine. But I was Terry Bradshaw, number one draft pick in Pittsburgh, and everybody wanted to go fishing with me. I was getting guess how much money I was making a day? $50. $50.
You would plan the NFL, and in right. the offseason, you would go and you're selling cars, right. you're selling fish.
Oh, everybody, these guys nowadays, these kids are good. You got to be kidding me. I said, nope. Hey, man, you got to get it, you know. And mate, when we won our first Super Bowl, I got no endorsements at all. No endorsements. And I got a call from Rex. You ever heard of Rexall Drugs? Yeah, Rexall Drugs. Get this. In Houston, Texas, of all places, where the Oilers were, they paid me $2,500 to come down and sign autographs at their Rexall Drugs. $2,500. I was like, God. So I drove to Houston from Shreveport for $2,500. And that's all the money I made other than selling Fleet.
That's crazy. So one of the things I wanted to ask you, I guess selfishly, is, you know, what did you...
Sebastian, where are you from?
I'm from the Dominican Republic.
Oh, okay.
Foreigner. Yeah, it's okay. An accent.
Weird, you know,
accent.
American football. You know anything? You know, where do you live?
In New York City. New York City.
Oh.
Buff. Yeah. I don't even want to. He's from Brooklyn. He's like, They almost made it. They were doing. They had a good year.
Who almost who?
They're the Buffalo Bills.
Oh, I thought you said New York City. Oh, you're a Buffalo Bill fan.
Oh yeah.
Oh, well.
But,
what happens when the Giants start winning?
They almost met. They were doing
okay. Good. No, I was hoping they would win it.
Yeah. Thank you.
No, I really was. I really was.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to interrupt you.
So I was going to ask you. So selfishly, like, what when you came in and you were doing car sales, you were doing NFL. What did you bring from the football field to the sales floor? Like, what were the similarities that you saw in actually being a high performance athlete and a salesperson?
First of all, I didn't know how to sell anything. I'm not going to lie to you. You know, I had to learn the codes on the windshield, the discounts, and I had to learn how to fill out the forms. And I mean, there was a lot of stuff I had to learn how to do. My sales approach has pretty much been the same my whole entire life. I'm just a good old boy. I'm just a fun guy who loves people. I love entertaining people. I love making people happy. I love bringing happiness to people. And I remember, and I'll answer your question by telling you this. The sales manager called me in and said, you got to stop selling these cars so cheap.
Give them discounts.
But if a family would come in, my heart would break for them because I could tell they don't have any money. You know, and I'm going to give them a deal like they've never seen. And if they bring a kid in, I'm finished. So I think I can sell stuff, but I'd really rather make you happy than me. You know, I sell horses all the time and I price them. I'll price a lot of horses at $10,000 to $15,000, and everybody else says, we're not going to sell it for $10,000. Oh, yeah, man, that's a lot of money for a baby horse. And then I go, no, we can get 20. Yeah, but, I mean, we can sell 10 at 10 or 15, and 20 maybe four. I mean, so and my wife's over there, we're not going to do that. And I said, well, okay. So I had a horse, a stud. And great stud, young horse, 4 years old, buckskin, gorgeous. And some people called me, their stallion had died, and these people, very wealthy, ton of money. And a guy named Dewey says, we'd like to try to buy Born Legacy. And I said, wow, he's my wife's favorite horse, which he was. He is amazing and just beautiful. I said, Dewey, I don't know. I mean, we just got him going in the breeding barn. He's booking Chris. I said, I didn't want to say $250,000. It's just like, really? I'm going to say $250,000? Oh, God, I can't say $250,000. So go to Tammy, my wife, and I said, they want to buy your horse, Born Legacy. Well, they're going to have to pay $450,000 if they want that horse. And I went, honey, $450,000. I mean, seriously, it's a 4-year-old horse. I mean, we raised him. He's free. And she says, no, I'm telling you right now. And I said, well, I'm not going to call him and tell him $450,000. So she did and sold him. I'm like, oh my God, 400. Oh, she, man, she's got no, she just look, oh, like, how do you, I can't do that. I can't. I'm going to, you know, Dale Brigsby, anybody in here follow Dale Brigsby? The guy that says he's the greatest bull rider in the world. You ever follow him? You see the two horses I sent him? I gave him two horses. I like him. I get the biggest kick out of him. So I called him one day and I said, Dale, you got room for a couple of really, really fine yearling colts? He said, yeah. I said, well, come on over. And I got a couple of yearlings for us. He came over and spent a day with us. I gave him two horses.
For free?
So I, yeah.
You should have called your wife to sell it.
Oh, no. But I think I'm not a hardline sales guy. I'm more of a, seriously, I'm dead serious. It's more about you being happy than me. My heart just cannot do that. I just who I am. My DNA is just, you know, I would think, I couldn't be president of the United States and do what they're doing. I would just not do that, man. I'm just too easygoing. That's not a good answer, is it? it's an honest answer. But
if you want to sell, you probably sold a lot of cars back in the day.
I sold salesman of the month.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Didn't make any money. Oh, yeah, I sold 19. Really well. I sold 19 was the most ever sold.
How much?
19 cars.
In 1 month?
Right.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that is a lot.
Yeah, made $400. I'm serious.
I don't know with inflation, it's $400 is a lot or a little with is that?
No, evidently it wasn't enough.
Okay. No,
wasn't enough because I got called in. You got to stop giving these cars away. Well, you stop signing off. You know, if you know anything about the car business, he's got to sign off on them. You know, he agreed to it. I got my picture on the wall. Salesman of the month.
You got the volume. You sell on volume, huh?
Oh.
So Terry, I want to ask you one more question, and then I want to open it up to the crowd.
Right.
So this is a question I want to ask you. I actually asked Coach Saban this question last year. So I want to get your point of view on this.
Nick Saban.
Nick Saban.
Y'all
yes.
had him here.
Oh yeah, last year.
You know, that's one guy I haven't met.
He's a great guy.
I've heard he was. He's the kind of guy that kind of scare me, kind of remind me a little bit of Chuck Noll. You know, that kind of rough, kind of ruffle. You're rough, you know.
Yeah.
You know that commercial he did for the Super, or the commercial was, look, this isn't a spa. You got 5 minutes to take a shower. You see that? I think that is like the funniest sucker I've ever seen. I love that commercial. And I've a lot of people have said, yeah, you really like him, but he kind of scared me. I don't know if I would approach him.
Oh yeah, no, he's super, he's
good.
Super nice. He's
yeah.
And okay. He's cracking jokes all the time.
Oh,
did you see him with
that's
that comedian?
Good to hear.
Yeah. You guys would get all. Did you see him with that comedian Shane Gillis? They were like, you call him Alabama Jones or something.
Right.
He was like, yeah. He's very cool. But anyway, so I asked him this question last year, and I want to ask you the same question from the point of view of a player. The question I asked him was, so anytime anybody talks about Coach Saban, they talk about the process and how important following the process is.
Right.
And one of the questions I asked him is, so over the years, he coached so many different players, like so many years of Bama. And I asked him, how do you deal with, you know, top performing players that are super talented, but are not really adapting to your process?
Yeah.
And do you try to mold the process to their talent, or do you try to mold the player? And how do you deal? And a lot of these business owners, they deal with that. Every single day, they have top performing salespeople, top performing technicians. They're super talented. They're bringing in numbers, but they don't adapt to the process. And
so what is more important? Yeah. Yes. So what's more important?
Yes.
Is it making more money from that one person than you could ever imagine? But yet he's not hitting the process. Now, what is your process? Is it is there certain guidelines in the way you want to approach your business? Is your business plan, or is it a moral clause? Is it a religious clause, family clause? I mean, is the process the way you have structured your company? But there, or let me answer that, Chris. I'll answer it by quoting Jimmy Johnson. If you are fantastic and if you are a superstar, you will be treated differently than the average Joe.
Yes.
All right. Jimmy would say, the heck with the process. Show me the results. And so what, depending on how severe, whatever your process is, I don't know what a process is. Nick probably has a process of, showing up on time is 15 minutes before we start and and being dressing on the field. I mean, I don't know what his process is. If I have a process at Bradshaw Quarter Horses, it's that here's my process. Get there when you can. Do your job, and when you're through, go home to your family. That's awesome. My process.
That's awesome.
And if I tell you more than twice to do something, I'm going to tell Tammy, and then she's going to fire your ass if you do that.
Call Tammy. Because
I'm not going to do it. It's a bad, I'm telling you, I can't do it. I can't do it. I cannot. I fired two people in my life. One worked for me 19 years, and I caught him stealing from me, so I couldn't wait to fire him. And I sat him down, looked him square in his eyes, and I said, I'm letting you go from this day forward. And he said, what are you talking about? I said, you're fired. Not working for me anymore. But we've been together. I don't care how long we've been together. You stole. And here's where I started showing him all the stuff he'd done. He said, well, I was going to pay you back. I said, were you? So why am I having this? Why am I having this meeting right now? Now you're going to pay me back. I know you're going to pay me. I don't want you to pay me back. You're not working for me anymore. So get your stuff. Give me the keys to the car. And that's it. What about my kids? You should have thought about that before you stole from me. And then the other one was someone that was super nice to me. It worked for me, but was bad to everybody else. And that probably could be a process. You're going to be nice to the people or you're not going to stay long. And I could look forward to letting her go, too. I've only fired two people. Three, actually. My uncle. I fired my uncle. That was my first fire.
Oh, wow.
A family member. Yeah. So I fired three key people in my life, and that's it. But now if I do it, Tammy's going to, because she can
call
do
Tammy.
It. Well, yeah, she's a radiologist over this department, Baylor Med, and she calls them in, and she's, you're out of here. And just lose no sleep over it. So, yeah, she'll do that. But, you know, you have to identify, but I think, you do become a little lenient, I think, in business if people are different. Now, the one thing you got to worry about is if that one person is doing so well, but he's tearing down the rest of the team, all right, I would call the team. Then we got to call him in and we got to have a serious talk, right. You know. So if he's a disruption, and if he's not, I'm all about being, you better be nice. You better be a good person. Someone I can talk to, someone that I know you'll listen to what I'm saying. So there really is a lot more than what I just said about a process, but you have to set down your values as a company, and whoever excels at that obviously will be treated a little differently than somebody else. But if they, I'm serious, if they are not a good person, I don't care how much money they're making. Me, I'm not going to put up with it. I can't handle that. I tell everybody, we have 13 employees. I bring them all in, and we have the greatest time. I go to Church's Fried Chicken, and I buy tons of chicken. Fridays, I barbecue for them. We have guests, and they're family to me. You know, that's how I approach it. And when I look at a glass, I always see it half full, and my wife sees it as half empty, yin and yang. And were you sure you want to feed them this Friday? You know, that's not in our budget. Screw the budget. I'm going to go buy some ribs and we're going to drink beer. And you know, but I think if people have to be, I'm all about good people, but I do know people. And I quoted the very one that I knew who exactly how he would answer it. And he would say, I'll treat him differently than everybody else.
How did it happen for you?
What did Nick say? I'll learn something here.
Well, Nick, actually, he gave an answer that was somewhat similar and somewhat different.
Oh, good.
Because, the similar part was he said that you want to find players that it's like a mix of the both.
Yeah, he said both.
That because somebody asked him the question. It's like, oh, is it 100? Like, do you want somebody with 80% compliance or
right.
like 80% talent. He's like, if it's 80% compliance, 80% talent, that's pretty good. That's amazing. Because you want to get the results at the end of the day.
Right.
And so what you try to do is you find that balance between the two, like people who follow the process, but also have this great natural talent. And then he ended the thing saying like, I learned a long time ago, I cannot coach a bad player to be good. So you have to, you have to have that talent bar.
I have had people that I'm a stickler on being clean. I don't want people showing up the same clothes you had yesterday. And we're ranchers, and we work outside. We get dirty. And I want you to shave. You know, don't show up. I mean, there are certain things. We've got people coming in all day long from all parts of the country, and I even had people flying from Europe. I don't want first guy they see is one guy I got on my places. Yeah, that's just looks like a hobo, you know? So, I mean, I get it to some extent. We're working hard. We're getting dirty. But I just have this thing about good people. I just like to go to work, and I like to hug all my people. I have three folks from, I call them Spanish people. I don't like to call them Mexicans, but that's what they are. So I don't really know how to say it. What do you call them? Latinos.
There's
thank
one
you.
Right there.
I always. Thank you. I'm not going to remember that. I'll tell you. But I call them Spanish. And Julian, because I'm not Spanish. And I said, well, what are you? Latino. You're right. And then I call them Mexican. I'm not. You know, They all are sweet, hard workers, been working for me for a lot of years. And we all hug one another. They'll hug. They come up. Julian especially comes up, and I've taught him some English phrases that we use. And one of them was, thank you for your time. And so he learns that in Spanish. And he said, thank you for your time. Thank you for your time. And cracked me up. He always hugs me, and Ruben always hugs me. We're family. Unfortunately, we're family. But I do think a good working atmosphere is healthy and it's profitable. People, we keep our people for the most part. Very seldom we lose people.
With the Steelers, you had that same kind of attitude.
Right. Well, you know, we had in the Steelers, and I know a lot of people here, if you're football fans back in the 70s, they say, what's the difference? Could the teams today play back then? Would it be the same results? And the answer is no, and I'll tell you why. We drafted our team, and today you can put a team together, and then you'll say, well, we need a linebacker, and there's going to be one out on the market, so you can go buy him. You know, we didn't have free agency. We didn't have the ability to go and sign player. You played for the Steelers, and you did not play for anybody else unless they cut you or they traded you. You stayed right there. So all four of our Super Bowls were with the same players, which is kind of cool.
That's awesome.
That's amazing.
That's awesome. So let's have some questions from the crowd. So, and we don't need microphones because we can hear you. So, yes.
Yeah.
If you've been listening to this show, you'll know that I only talk about tools that actually help our team. And Bluon is definitely one of those. At Peterman Brothers, our techs are using Bluon every single day. It's become their go-to resource. It really is like having a senior tech in your pocket. They can scan a unit, get all the model data, wiring diagrams, parts, and even troubleshoot with Bluon's AI. We've seen fewer callbacks, faster fixes, and happier techs. And that's why I'm such a big believer in Bluon. Because it actually works. So do yourself a favor, click on the link in the description and book a quick demo with the Bluon team to see it in action.
In home services, speed to lead is everything. Chirp stands out by transforming your communication strategy. With Chirp, accelerate your lead response time with instant SMS text messaging, email, and ringless voicemail automation. Chirp's cutting-edge technology ensures you're the first and the most persistent, helping you close more deals than ever. But that's not all. Say goodbye to missed opportunities with Chirp's incredible follow-up system. Keep your leads engaged and moving smoothly through your sales funnel without lifting a finger. And with Chirp's deep integrations with top CRMs like ServiceTitan, HouseCall Pro, and Jobber, you can launch laser-targeted campaigns to connect with the exact right leads at the exact right time. Automation creates efficiency. Efficiency unlocks scalability. With Chirp, you can automate speed to lead, estimate follow-ups, rehash, abandoned call follow-ups, canceled job follow-ups, review requests, outbounding to your list, annual reminders, membership expiration follow-ups, and so much more. So stop chasing leads. Capture them. connect faster, and close more deals with Chirp. Contact Chirp today and elevate your communication game.
Look at that. Look at him trying to sell you already, man. He's a trying.
Yes. Yeah, she's hot too. She's a good looking gal, man. I'm not kidding you. When she came down to, in that x-ray department, I saw her, man. I was like, you ever seen that movie where Jim Carrey, where he's turns into the mask, beating his head with a hammer? That's what I was doing. I'm like, holy cow, check this out. Right. Well, you know, haven't you gotten used to Jerry? Yeah. That's not ever going to change. I don't understand. I don't understand it, but it's his team. I like him. I like him because he's good to me. But, yeah, that's what he wants. And so I think the Cowboy fans, you know, they haven't done a bad job drafting, I don't think. But as general manager, he's not out scouting these guys. Other people are. And Jerry's just proud of what he's done, proud of his accomplishments as a businessman. And if the Cowboys win again, some people like Jerry, just, they want credit. That's one of the problems he had with Jimmy. He told Jimmy, you run the football, I'll run the business. And Jimmy ran the football. Then he told Jimmy, hey, how about mention me, tell me how I was involved in Herschel Walker training. No, you weren't involved in it. I did that. And so there was a conflict. So that's his personality. It's unfortunate for a Cowboy fan that that they don't like him as a general manager. I can't really say that he's doing a bad job. I do know he made a mistake in signing Dak Prescott. I feel that was a big mistake. Then he signed a wide receiver. Now he's got to sign the linebacker. Then how much money have you got left? Now you got to patch up that offensive line. You got to get another wide receiver. You let Schultz go down to Houston, the tight end. Now you got to get another tight end. You got to get a corner. I mean, you got six needs, and he's a general manager. He's running the business. He's not running. The football's been run by somebody else. He's just taking the credit for it. And to answer your question, it would be better if he would turn that over to someone that's an expert in that. But that's not going to happen. Never going to happen. And no. Yeah. Yeah. How can he do that when he got Deion. Remember when he got Deion, he got the. So, I mean, he has, but I know for a fact they didn't want to play. They did not want to pay Prescott. Didn't want to pay him. And I think the public he felt he better sign him. I wouldn't have signed him for $60 million. But if Prescott knew he was going to get signed, and if he'd have let him go, what was he going to get? But then he got hurt. But he's been hurt three times now. And it's hard to find a quarterback. You will not see a successful coach in the NFL that doesn't have a great quarterback on his hip. Name them right now. And every one of them's got a quarterback. And I like Prescott, but he has not proven to me that he can do it when you need it, when you need it. Now, they lost a playoff game to Green Bay, and he threw for 400-something yards. He did that in the fourth quarter when the game was so far out of reach, So,
I think we have time for one more question.
That's it? We're on a time
one more minute.
I got a minute. I wish I'd have shut up. I've been talking too long.
Question right here. He raised his hand.
Well,
right.
We'll have one more question from him. And then we'll have a question from the ladies. We have no lady involvement yet.
Okay, we got it. Okay, let's do one.
I'll give a short answer to this question. All right, good one. man, Sean Payton. Sean Payton is amazing. Coach at Denver. He commands respect, and he's brilliant. Oh, man, he is. You sit down. I sat down with him for a whole year doing football. He is so brilliant, and he's got such an energy, and he loves his players. He loves them, and then he does tough love. No, he's a daddy love, all right? I love you. I love you so much, but bend your ass over. I am going to whip you right now. But I love you, and that's Sean Payton. I love Sean Payton. I think Jim Harbaugh with the Chargers is another guy that players love to play for. God, you got me on the Harbaugh there. Harbaugh in Baltimore. It's super, super smart, fun guy. And, of course, my favorite is Andy Reid. And he's just – I texted him the night before the Super Bowl and I said, good luck. I hope I'm on the podium presenting you this trophy for a three-peat. Now, I knew they were going to lose this game. And but my wife's from Kansas City. She's a Chiefs fan. When Tom Brady was going for the undefeated season and they lost to the New York Giants, I was in New York. I was in Seattle for that game. We did at Fox. And I said, I'm pulling for New England because I want to be a part of history too. And I'll be presenting the trophy. And so my picture's going to get taken with Tom Brady and Belichick. And to be a part of that at Fox was just so cool. They got beat. Same kind of defense that you saw Philadelphia do to Kansas City. And I knew that it was not going to work. And my wife kept telling me, are they going to win? I go, honey, no. They're not going to win. She says, why not? And I told her why I thought, why not? And but I picked them on television. Chiefs. I wanted it to be. Anyway. There's more, I'm sure. No one lady? Quick. Yes, ma'am. Hey, go Vikings, go. Hey, Minnesota. I love them. What? Oh. You know what? Why not, huh? How good is that guy? And we look at Sam Darnold. He took a journeyman who I've always liked. I've always said this. You draft a quarterback in the first round. He is going to be successful, but you've got to surround him with the kind of talent he had in college. And they don't do it, and they call him a bust. Baker Mayfield's in the Tampa Bay playing great now because he's got talent around him. The Steelers get rid of Kenny Pickett, a first rounder. Got rid of him after 2 years, all right? And they're still looking for a quarterback. They didn't even do anything to build around him. Sam Darnold goes into Minnesota. Look at all those weapons. All those weapons. And look what happened. How great did he play? He didn't play well in the playoff game, but he didn't have time to throw either. That defense was all over him. But, yeah, that guy, and he's such a good dude, that head coach. Yes, here's what I think will happen. I'm just guessing now. I think they'll just franchise him for 1 year, and that's $40 million. $40 million 1 year is better than $250 over five, and you got the kid from Michigan sitting on the bench who, by the way, was going to be really good. We could have had four rookie quarterbacks play great this year. And what's that kid's name? McCarthy. Yeah, you got the kid, and you had Daniels, and you had the guy in Chicago who I like, Williams. Where's the other rookie? Bo Nix, Denver. As a matter of fact, Sean Payton pulled me aside at the Super Bowl. He said, boy, have I got me a good one. I said, yeah, I got me a good one. So, yeah, thank you for that. Thank you for that question.
And I think we are out of time. So, ladies and gentlemen, one more time.
One more time. Thank you, folks. Terry Bradshaw. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much,
Keep Terry. Those cards and letters coming in. If you're ever in Branson, I have a show that's in Branson all year long, and then we'll be up in Toronto this year and doing. I'm singing with Kick Brooks and Dunn in Thackerville, Oklahoma, with Big Wind Star. Man, I travel. I'm a singing Jesse, man. Yeah, you didn't know that, did you? I was upset you didn't ask me to bring my guitar. I could have serenaded these folks to that. Yeah, there. Didn't know that, did you? See, you didn't do your homework. See, that's where you messed up. No, you didn't, Sebastian. All right, what do we do now?
Don't forget, I'm
and we get out.
Oh, we leave. Get out. Let's go. Let's go meet and greet. Thank you.
Thank you, man. Thank you.